If you're a human, like me, you started your life as a single cell, which replicated over and over until that one cell turned into around 30 trillion. Most of these cells look like that diagram you see in a biology textbook, a blob encased by a membrane with a bunch of smaller, blobby structures inside, like the nucleus, where your DNA gets stored. And most of these cells are very, very small. But at some point in your life, somewhere between that 1 and 30 trillion, your body produced a cell that in less than a year grew so big that its surface spanned around 13 square meters. That's almost twice the size of a king bed sheet. If you're thinking, how could I possibly fit that inside of me? Well, you didn't. It grew outside of you. Unless you also belong to a certain subset of the human population, in which case they do also grow inside of you. But we'll get back to that weirdness later. For this huge cell to form, billions of individual cells had to fuse together, sort of like a big old slime monster. Naturally, scientists have a lot of questions about how a cell that size can even exist. One of the people at the forefront of this research is Hannah Jevic at Brandeis University, and to appreciate how amazing her work is, you kind of have to see it. That's why we created this new series called SciShow Field Trips. Each episode, we get out of the studio and visit a lab where cutting-edge science is happening, like Jevic's. We sent our friend Jada Elcock to Boston to meet the biophysicist and learn about her obsession with this massive, mysterious cell.
Thanks, Hank! The physics department might seem like a weird place for someone who's interested in cell biology to hang out, but Jevic studies biomechanics, specifically how cells fold and grow. And her path through academia has always involved more than one subject.
You have all these diverse backgrounds. How does that influence the way that you work, the different tools that you use, and things like that?
I did an undergraduate research experience in dark matter.
Oh, wow.
Which was actually amazing. I spent a summer in Italy in this lab that's underneath a mountain to look for dark matter. And, you know, I think through each research experience, you develop sort of new tools, new perspectives on how to see scientific questions, how to ask the questions, and also what kind of tools you can use to answer them.
Since she was a kid, Jevic has been asking all kinds of questions about the world to fuel her curiosity. She recently found an old childhood journal of hers stuffed full of them.
I've always been really fascinated with just asking questions. And so, yeah, as a child, I was always asking so many questions to my parents that they're like, okay, we'll write them down in a journal. And they were all, you know, kind of silly kid things. Yeah. Like I was wondering about, you know, if you have a penny and it gets run over by an airplane, is it going to get like more dense? Do chickens make good pets? You know, which is also, I don't know what that question is supposed to really mean.
And that curiosity about the world would eventually include a sense of wonder about herself. In fact, Jevic discovered the subject of her current research project when she was pregnant. She was reading about the transformation her body was going through and became interested in the placenta. That's the organ that provides oxygen and nutrients to the fetus, among other things. Now, some of you may be thinking, well, what does the placenta have to do with me? I do not, nor have I ever, possessed the bits necessary to gestate a baby. But the thing is, every single person once had a placenta. The placenta is made by the fetus, not the parent. Its cells have the DNA of the child.
I did not know that the fetus was making its own placenta, which is really cool, but what exactly does that mean for studying this type of system?
I think what's interesting in your reaction, and I think it's pretty common, is that people don't know that the placenta is really a fetal tissue.
Right.
And so that means that you can have male or female placenta. I think the placenta has largely been kind of put under this umbrella of women's health, mm-hmm. you know, and that it's kind of gross and people don't really want to think about it.
Right.
And as a result has led to sort of a huge amount of understudied and sort of like blind spots in terms of our understanding of placental development.
Reading about the placenta, Jevic came across an even more mind-blowing fact. It contains a single massive cell in the outermost layer called a syncytiotrophoblast. This cell has many folds, but if it were laid out flat, it would be big enough to cover a pickup truck. She was immediately fascinated.
The placenta is like a vascular tree
yeah.
of sort of these villi, and this single cell covers over this entire vascular tree, forming a surface area of 12 to 13 meters squared. I didn't believe it for a while, and then I was like, this is crazy. How do you go from, you know, cells and some tissues being, you know, tens of microns to a cell that reaches a surface area of about 13 meters squared?
But what exactly does it do?
Beyond just being a really big cell, which I thought was fascinating, it acts like multiple kind of separate organs that are in the human. At term, you have about 600 milliliters of blood that's moving every minute between the mother and the fetus.
Oh, wow.
And that brings oxygen to the fetus, so it's acting like a lung. It has really important hormonal functions as well. So it's secreting hormones, and so it's acting sort of liver functions. It helps filtering out toxins. It helps with sort of protecting from viral infection or pathogen infection. And so it's really amazing because it's acting with all, has all these different diverse functions, but yet it's sort of one single continuous kind of like pool, a cytoplasmic pool in one single cell.
But even though this huge cell is universal to all placental mammals, not just humans, the Syncytia trophoblast can be pretty tricky to study. After all, the placenta is a temporary organ. It only exists for the 9 months of pregnancy. There isn't a lot of research about the placenta in general, let alone its amazing giant cell, and there's a lot more we want to learn. That's where Yevik and her team come in. They're looking to answer how the Syncytia trophoblast manages to stay strong and hold itself together as it grows bigger and bigger throughout pregnancy, despite all the stress it's under, as well as, you know, just understand the cell's structure more generally.
We're really interested in how things span multiple length scales. How does the cell go from having one nuclei to 2 to 10 to 20 to a billion, mm-hmm. covering all of those orders of magnitude? We're looking for some basic fundamental principles, something that like determines the length scales that pop up over and over again, something that determines how they're able to hold their size as they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and also when they fail. So when does it not manage to hold its size? Right. When does it start to fail, get too big, start, you know, rupturing itself? These are all things that we're able to probe with our model system, which makes it a really good experimental tool for us to use.
But for reasons we'll explain in a minute, it's hard to grow that huge placental cell in a lab. So the team is currently forcing a bunch of your traditional biotextbook cells with one nucleus to all fuse together. That turns them into a single multinuclear cell called a syncytium. And syncytia are far from a placenta-exclusive feature in the human body. Consider your skeletal muscle cells, which have long organized fibers made of fused cells that help you contract your muscles over bigger distances, like the hamstrings in your thighs or the biceps in your arms. Meanwhile, your cells can also form syncytia when things aren't working correctly. Certain viruses and cancers cause them.
So, for example, during viral infection, you can get cells that form syncytia or multinucleated cells. In tumors, you can have larger cells with multiple nuclei. But what I found was that the placenta was the most sort of drastic example of a giant cell. And so that really sort of sparked my excitement to try and understand how is it even possible to get such a huge size cell.
Obviously, it's not ideal to have these big cells form randomly in our bodies where they're not supposed to. But this virus-induced fusion could be a big part of what makes us, well, us. In rare cases, when a virus infects a cell involved in reproduction but doesn't cause lasting damage, that viral DNA gets transferred to the infected person's offspring. It becomes incorporated into their genome basically forever. They're called endogenous retroviruses, and the leftovers from their infections make up an estimated 8% of our genome. They also make this Syncytia trophoblast possible. The reason why placental cells can all fuse together at all is the 1-2 punch of proteins called syncytin-1 and syncytin-2, both of which owe their existence to two separate endogenous retroviruses.
This is really cool because the placenta is really very intimately related to who we are as humans. It allows fetuses to develop over the course of 9 months and access a huge amount of blood and a huge amount of nutrients. And that could have only happened if, you know, this virus insertion happened into the human genome.
Right.
So we kind of are who we are because of viruses.
Viruses are also helping Yevik and her team grow the biggest possible cells in the lab. They figured out a way to make cells fuse together using a protein from the influenza virus. These epithelial cells don't have exactly the same proteins that made the giant placental cell possible, but they're a good model when the goal is just to create super big cells to study.
So epithelial cells are quite a good cell type to use. They are robust, they're easy to work with, and they're able to fuse together to form multinucleated cells as well.
So what we do is that we artificially put this influenza virus fusogenic protein on the surface of our cells. Mm-hmm. And then with a pH shock, what happens is that it opens up and kind of allows it to fuse with neighboring cells inside the tissue.
How close have you gotten to that 13 meter squared goal?
We're still in like millimeter.
Okay.
It's ongoing. And it's also, it's interesting because it's actually the cells are quite unstable at that size scale, which in and of itself, I think, has given us some interesting scientific questions about, like, why are they so unstable?
Right. Even though Yevik's team can't reach the 13 square meters of a typical syncytia trophoblast, they can still explore the organization of all the nuclei, as well as other stuff like how those big cells manage to stay together. Meanwhile, in cancers, multinuclear cells can form because the internal machinery is, well, kind of broken. Normally, many of our cells make exact copies of themselves through a process called mitosis, which involves copying the DNA inside the nucleus and then dividing into two identical cells. But cancerous cells are abnormal. They have some sort of mutation or damage that causes them to grow out of control, including replicating their genetic information without dividing. This can lead to a bunch of nuclei accidentally getting wrapped up in one cell membrane, better known as, say it with me, syncytia.
Those are human cells, but they're carcinogenic. Right. So those also, they act a little bit more like the syncytia trophoblast cells, but they're a little weird because they're cancer cells now.
They fuse spontaneously, unlike our really artificial system, and they can be stimulated to fuse more readily.
Right.
But even with that, we've only been able to get them to form syncytia with about the size of tens of nuclei inside them at most.
Right.
And so the goal really is to work kind of synergistically between our different systems.
Why don't those immortalized cells get as big?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's something that we don't really know.
Okay.
When we started this work, you know, me and my students, we did a lot of literature research trying to find in the literature what is like the biggest picture of a syncytia and placental syncytia that we could find. In the literature too, typically, you know, if you even see a syncytia, they're not really that big.
So inside our cell incubator right here, we have a couple more flasks of other cells. So these in this dish. These are cells that I already have shocked with a pH shock. So remember what the cells looked like before. They had these like regular kind of geometric patterns in them. And now for this one, you'll see regions where you still see those patterns here. And then you'll see regions where things look totally different.
Right.
And the regions where they're totally different is one continuous large cell. You look close. Those are actually nuclei that we're seeing. So all of these circles with little black specks in them, those are all the nuclei of all the cells that have fused together.
And then we have just like these islands of unfused cells.
Yeah, so they didn't make the cut. Whoa. For some reason, they were not invited to the party of the giant cell. So this is now really, really zoomed out. So you can see the cells there are small. You can start to get a sense of scale here. The giant cell doesn't look too happy. As you can see, there's regions of it where there's just holes inside the big cell. But yet it manages to keep going. This thing is alive.
Wow.
Even though there's some random holes in it and it's holding a really weird geometry.
Okay, quickly before we get into the science, I have such an important question. Why is there a cat on your microscope?
This is Erwin, the namesake of the microscopes. He is a grad student in this lab's cat.
Nice.
Actually named after Erwin Schrödinger. This microscope is a little different from the one we were looking at in the cell room.
Okay.
Because this one, in addition to being able to look at things just, you know, in the black and white that we were seeing before, it has the ability to control the wavelength of light.
Okay.
So now we can excite a particular dye that we've put in our sample, and then we can see the signal out from that dye. So now what we're doing is we're looking around one of these giant cells. The regular shapes are the mononucleate cells. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to switch our wavelength to blue, drag the exposure down, and now we can see that that cell is in fact made up of a whole bunch of nuclei.
Wow.
All packed together.
Still, it's useful to see how placental syncytia are different from the epithelial ones, which can teach us more about the structure of big cells with multiple nuclei in general. The team thinks the syncytia trophoblast might be supported by filaments connecting lots of nuclei together, making the nuclei act sort of like pillars supporting a bridge. But their hypotheses are still evolving with every experiment they do.
This is a frozen cell. It's called a fixed cell. We have frozen it in place with paraformaldehyde, so it's dead. But with this dead cell, we can start packing in dyes that are really, really specific to different parts of the cell that we might be interested in. One thing I want to highlight, which I think is really cool, are these really long, sharp bands of the actin. We think that's one way that the giant cell is able to hold its shape, is that it develops these giant bands to help, you know, maintain its integrity.
To examine the structure of these cells, Yevik is actually going back to her interdisciplinary roots.
I really love bringing in ideas from all different disciplines and kind of mixing and matching. And so a tool that I developed during my postdoc was actually to take this filamentous tracing algorithm from astronomy and use it to trace this filamentous structure inside the developing fruit fly embryo. What this algorithm allows us to do is to take a highly noisy image and find sort of the peaks in it and sort of the ridges that connect those peaks together, which are the filaments themselves.
To use these new techniques, Yevik plans to work with nearby hospitals to get healthy placental cells to study. In many cases, placentas are discarded after the babies are born. But scientists can also save them, including the cells that make up this Incidio trophoblast, for further research.
So what are the goals when you finally get to the point of studying living, healthy placental cells? Human placental cells.
Yeah, there's a lot of people doing work like this. I think we're specifically interested in taking the approach of looking at it as an organoid. So instead of just having a flat quasi-2D layer, now we're going to introduce some curvature, some ability for the cells to exist on an external matrix, you know, that has some kind of preset shape, or, you know, having the cells be in some kind of, you know, maybe a sphere, a ball of placenta cells. They still have a limited complexity, but they approach closer and closer to something that is like a real organ.
It opens the door to ask really interesting questions about, okay, if you have syncytia inside more sort of physiological shapes, so kind of curved structures, how does that impact fusion? How does it impact mechanics of those cells?
As a woman forging a career in biophysics, Yevik has gravitated towards questions around the biology of human health, especially women's health. And she hopes this research will help us understand the placenta better and improve medical outcomes in difficult pregnancies. Just a heads up, we're about to talk about preeclampsia, which is a complication that can occur during pregnancy. If that is something you'd rather not hear today, you can skip to this timestamp on screen.
But what exactly is preeclampsia, and how does that relate to the Syncytia trophoblasts?
Preeclampsia is a very common pregnancy complication that can develop in different ways, sort of early stage or late stage preeclampsia. But basically, it's all united by this idea that the placenta is not getting enough blood. And this can trigger sort of a stress response in the Syncytia trophoblast that sends signals to kind of the mother that can wreak havoc on, for example, blood pressure, maternal blood pressure. And typically, we can just, the only thing we can really do is deliver the baby at that point to sort of bring the blood pressure back down. We really don't know how to treat preeclampsia effectively, despite the fact that it's really ubiquitous.
So with a better understanding of the Syncytia trophoblast, doctors might have a better idea of what can cause preeclampsia and be able to develop treatments for it. But Yevik hasn't just thought about what this research could one day mean for the fields of obstetrics and women's health. Remember, her lab is in the physics department. Yevik mentioned there's another lab at Brandeis that's engineering biomaterials, and she could imagine lots of ways that growing a giant sheet-sized cell could have really interesting materials science properties, from filtering the air to protecting the development of something underneath it.
Can you take a giant cell sheet and use that for kind of to engineer that in a system that could be sort of bio-inspired?
Right.
Can you use it to cover over kind of an implantable device inside a human?
One of the exciting parts of a relatively unexplored field of research is that questions don't just lead to answers, they lead to even more questions.
Questions are so foundational to science, and I almost see like questions as like being more important than answers, because I feel like when you do research, you know, firstly, like the more research you do, the more experience you have, I feel like the better your questions get. Like, oh, wow, this is more and more interesting. But then also, at least personally, that when you find the answer, it's almost just like springboard to the next interesting question.
Yeah. With all of the interesting questions Yevik has been uncovering lately, maybe it's time for her to add to that childhood journal.
SciShow Field Trips are made with our friends at HHMI Tangled Bank Studios. We've come together to bring you face-to-face with researchers at the cutting edge of scientific discovery. You can watch more of Tangled Bank's science content at tangledbankstudios.org.